By the time we hit the year 2026, the most important colleague you work with probably won't have a desk or, you know, a salary or even a pulse.
Right.
But they will somehow know exactly how to do your job, and they might even anticipate your very next move before you actually make it.
It's a pretty jarring thought, isn't it? But I gotta say, that isn't some kind of dystopian science fiction scenario. It's really just the mathematical reality of where enterprise technology is heading right now. Because we are moving from like software that just executes your basic commands to these massive systems that orchestrate entire outcomes for
Which
you.
is exactly why we are doing this deep dive today.
Yeah.
I mean, if you follow tech at all, you are definitely already swimming in the hype, right? You
Okay.
hear about AGI, neural networks, large language models. The noise is just, well, it's deafening.
Oh, absolutely deafening.
So our mission today, based on this incredible comprehensive guide we've been reviewing, is to really cut through that static. We want to break down the true trajectory of artificial intelligence as we race toward 2026.
Yeah, we really need to parse out the genuine mechanical leaps from the marketing spin.
Exactly. So you, the listener, know exactly what this actually means for your daily life and, of course, your career in the near future.
Because the gap between what people think is happening inside these massive data centers and what is actually happening, it's massive, like totally misunderstood.
Okay, let's unpack this. If we just strip away that whole mystic aura everyone likes to put around AI, the baseline goal here is pretty straightforward. It's about creating machines that can simulate human intelligence.
Right. Simulating, not replicating.
Right, so we're talking about three main pillars here: learning from past data, reasoning to make decisions, and automating complex tasks. But, you know, before we can even talk about why the 2026 landscape is going to look so radically different, we have to establish exactly what is happening under the hood today.
Yeah, we have to demystify the black box, so to speak, because an AI doesn't just, magically know things. It isn't a brain in a jar.
Thank goodness.
Right, it actually operates on a very distinct four-step life cycle. And that first-step data collection is actually becoming this massive bottleneck for the industry right now.
I really want to dig into that, actually, because the narrative we always hear is just, oh, we scrape the internet for data, we hoard all the text, the images, the numbers. But hoarding is actually becoming the problem, isn't it? Like, it isn't just about volume anymore.
No, not at all. It is entirely about high-quality human data. These AI systems are just incredibly data hungry, but we are effectively running out of pristine human-generated text to train them on.
Wait, running out? How is that even possible with the whole internet?
Well, because if you just blindly scrape the entire internet today, you are inevitably scraping data that was already generated by another AI.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, and that leads to this phenomenon called model collapse. Think of it like photocopying a
The
photocopy.
resolution just degrades over time.
Exactly, the patterns get distorted. So, assuming you do secure high-quality data, you hit step two, which is data processing, because you can't just dump a million PDFs into a server and expect the machine to learn.
Right, that raw data is just total chaos.
Complete chaos. Processing means translating that human chaos into machine-readable mathematics. And this involves something called creating vector embeddings.
Okay, vector embeddings. That sounds very sci-fi.
It does, but it's really just geometry. To an AI, a word or an image isn't a concept like you or I think of it. It's a literal coordinate in a high-dimensional space. The system maps the mathematical distance between concepts. That is exactly how it understands that the word king relates to man the exact same way queen relates to woman. It's just measuring the geometry between those data points.
That is wild. And that geometry takes us right into step three, right?
Yeah.
Which is where the real friction lies, training the model.
Yep, step three.
Because we hear the phrase machine learning algorithms thrown around constantly, but what is actually happening during that training phase?
So the system is basically adjusting its internal weights. If you think of a neural network as like billions of microscopic dials,
Go.
during training, the AI runs that processed data through these dials and it attempts to make a prediction, like guessing the very next word in a sentence. And then it checks if it was right. If it's wrong, there's this algorithm called backpropagation that sends a signal backwards through the whole network, slightly tweaking those billions of dials so it guesses better the next time.
You know, I always picture this whole training mechanism less like a student studying a textbook and more like a master counterfeiter.
A counterfeiter. That's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah, well, think about it like this. You lock a new intern in a room,
Okay.
right? And the AI doesn't just memorize a $100 bill. It looks at a million different $100 bills until it fundamentally understands the underlying math of the watermark, the ink distribution, the paper texture. It learns it well enough to just draw a brand new one from scratch. It's capturing the statistical distribution of the data, like an intern reading every past project file so they can predict what the boss needs before being asked.
That is a phenomenal analogy, actually. It really isn't storing facts at all. It is purely storing the probability of patterns. And, you know, that takes us right to the fourth step, which is making predictions and decisions.
Right.
Once your counterfeiter knows the math, you give it a prompt, and it generates an output based entirely on those learned probabilities.
But here is the critical differentiator from, like, the traditional software we're used to.
Yeah.
It doesn't just freeze there once it makes a prediction, right? The system is designed for continuous improvement. As it encounters new data or gets feedback from users, it can theoretically keep adjusting its weights. It gets better without being explicitly programmed for every single new task.
Though I do need to be clear here, retraining a massive model from scratch is incredibly computationally expensive, like absurdly expensive.
Absurd.
Which is why researchers are heavily focused right now on ways to update these models without causing them to just forget what they already know. There's this issue called catastrophic forgetting.
Catastrophic forgetting. That sounds ominous.
It really does.
So if this technology is continually rewriting its own internal geometry, the obvious fear that dominates the news cycle is that it writes a geometry we no longer understand or control.
Right.
You see tech CEOs writing these dystopian think pieces about the end of the world. But honestly, are people panicking because they think we are dealing with general AI when in reality, everything we use today is just really advanced narrow AI?
They absolutely are. It is the classic sci-fi versus reality problem. When we look at the actual architecture of AI, we categorize it into three specific tiers: narrow AI, general AI, and super AI.
Okay.
And getting these definitions straight is really the only way to actually prepare for 2026.
Let's start with where we actually are right now then. Narrow AI, or weak AI, as the source calls it.
Right. Narrow AI is just a system optimized for a specific domain. Yeah. It uses all that vector math and dial tweaking we just talked about to learn patterns for a single bounded function.
Like a chess engine.
Exactly. A chess engine plays chess. A protein folding algorithm folds proteins. It does one thing really, really well.
But hold on, let me push back on that for a second.
Yeah.
When you interact with a modern large language model today, it really feels general.
It does feel that way, yeah.
Right, because you can ask it to write Python code.
Yeah.
And then immediately ask it to translate a poem into French.
Yeah.
And then ask it to summarize a 20-page financial report. That doesn't feel narrow at all. It feels like general AI.
No.
Why is it still classified as narrow?
That's a great question. It's because mimicking language is fundamentally a narrow task, even if language itself covers every topic in the world.
Oh, I see.
The model doesn't actually have a fundamental underlying world model. It has no actual common sense. It is just remarkably good at predicting the next word across a vast distribution of topics.
So it's still just the counterfeiter.
Exactly. It cannot pivot to a completely new domain outside its training. Like, you couldn't ask an LLM to suddenly start driving a physical car without it being entirely rebuilt and retrained from the ground up for that specific task.
So general AI, or strong AI, which would be a system capable of learning and applying intelligence across truly diverse, unrelated domains, just like a human brain that is not what is sitting on our laptops today.
No, not at all. General AI is basically the holy grail of current research, but we face massive technical hurdles before we get there, like that data exhaustion problem we mentioned earlier.
And the compute power.
Yes, massive compute limitations. And then super AI, a system that is hypothetically vastly more intelligent than all of humanity combined.
The sci-fi movie villain.
Right, that remains a purely theoretical concept. Literally everything moving the needle in our economy right now, no matter how impressive it looks, is highly advanced, narrow AI automating specific tasks to improve efficiency.
Which is a relief, frankly.
I mean,
it means we aren't dealing with a conscious entity here. We're dealing with a highly specialized predictive engine. So let's skip the basic consumer stuff for a minute.
Okay.
We all know AI filters our email spam and unlocks our phones with facial recognition. Let's talk about the real frontier. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Uh-huh.
How is this advanced narrow AI actually manifesting in the wild as an invisible butler in our lives as we approach 2026?
Well, we are seeing a massive shift across major industries beyond just, you know, Siri and Google Assistant or optimizing your route on a map app.
Right.
We are moving towards systems that really alter professional fields. Look at healthcare, for instance. Mm. AI uses incredible pattern recognition for disease diagnosis now.
Yeah, that's huge.
An AI examining an MRI isn't looking at a picture the way a human doctor does. It is analyzing pixel density and pattern variations against millions of other scans to spot microscopic geometric anomalies that might precede a tumor.
And it does it in seconds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in finance, it's used for risk assessment and fraud detection. In education, it's powering smart, personalized lessons that adapt to a student's pace.
Let's actually unpack the fraud detection one, because when you look at how this is deployed in global finance, it's mind-bending.
Oh, it really is.
Because traditional software just looks for a rigid rule, right? Mm-hmm. Like if a transaction is over $5,000, flag it. But AI plots your entire life's financial behavior on a multidimensional map.
Yep, it isn't looking at a single threshold anymore. It plots thousands of variables simultaneously.
Right, so if you buy a coffee in Paris, the AI doesn't just see the location. It sees that you didn't buy your usual plane ticket to get there. It sees your phone's geolocation data doesn't match the terminal. It even notices that your typing cadence on the banking app was slightly off from your usual rhythm. It plots that single data point, and mathematically, the trajectory of that transaction is out of bounds for your specific cluster of normal behavior, and boom, card locked.
And it does that calculation in milliseconds. What's fascinating here is that the ultimate purpose of all these applications, from your Netflix recommendations to those complex medical scans, is simply to save time, reduce human effort, and improve the final results.
But we really have to look at the massive trade-offs involved here, right? Because if we are handing over this level of our daily routine and infrastructure to predictive algorithms, the risks scale proportionally with the speed. It's a total double-edged sword.
They absolutely do. You have to weigh the massive advantages against some pretty stark disadvantages.
Okay, let's lay them out.
On the pro side, you have 204 SISM availability. AI doesn't sleep. You have incredibly high accuracy and the ability to handle massive, massive data sets that would take humans' lifetimes to process.
But on the con side?
The cons are severe. There's the obvious job loss risk as automation increases. There are high development costs. Huge privacy risks when dealing with all that personal data. And crucially, data bias.
I really want to talk about that bias piece, because I think this gets misunderstood in the media as a like a moral failing of the machine. But it's actually just a mechanical math problem, isn't it?
Precisely. It is an optimization problem at its core. If your training data contains historical human bias, say, a hiring data set from a company where men were historically promoted way more often than women.
Okay.
The neural network's weights will naturally adjust to favor that skew because mathematically it believes that is the correct pattern it's supposed to replicate.
Wow.
It completely lacks human judgment. It cannot step back and say, wait a minute, this data set is sociologically unfair. It just executes the math it was optimized for.
Which really brings up the ultimate existential question for the workforce and for the listener. When you look at the pros, these systems don't sleep. They process multidimensional data in milliseconds. They never get distracted. If AI is so fast and mathematically accurate, does human intelligence even stand a chance?
Yeah.
Or are we just slower, more error-prone versions of these algorithms?
You know, it's really easy to feel that way when you watch an AI instantly generate a flawless financial model or write a perfect essay. But we are fundamentally different in how we process reality.
How so?
Well, relying strictly on trained data and programmed logic means AI entirely lacks human emotions, creativity, and judgment. But most importantly, humans possess something AI entirely lacks right now, the ability to handle brand new, untrained situations.
No.
Out of distribution problem.
Out of distribution, like things outside the data set.
Exactly. AI is strictly bound by the parameters of its training data. If you throw a completely novel situation at an AI, a true black swan event that is never seen before, it breaks down, it hallucinates or it crashes because it has no mathematical weights for that scenario.
It just doesn't know what to guess.
Right. Humans, on the other hand, have lived experience. We have intuition and common sense. If the rules of the game suddenly change in the middle of a project, we adapt instantly. We improvise.
Yeah.
AI doesn't know how to improvise. It only knows how to predict based on the past.
But when it comes to problem solving, AI basically solves problems using massive brute force calculations within known parameters.
Mm.
But humans use critical thinking to redefine the parameters entirely. We actually know there is a real world outside the data set.
Exactly. which is exactly why the trajectory toward 2026 is not about humans being replaced. It is entirely about orchestration and collaboration.
Okay, so knowing that humans still hold the monopoly on creativity and adaptability, how will our relationship with AI evolve over these next couple of years?
Well, we are seeing a rapid evolution from simple rule-based systems to generative AI tools that actually create text, images, and code. But the real shift mentioned in the research is moving from handling small, isolated tasks to managing complete workflows.
The workflow automation.
Yes, workflow automation and providing what they call decision intelligence.
Let's paint a picture of that 2026 workflow for the listener. Because historically, like you said, AI handled isolated microtasks. You use an AI to just graph one specific email. But looking ahead, we are talking about chaining those tasks together, right?
Yes, precisely. Think about an AI acting as a project manager. Say an incoming customer complaint hits a company's server. The AI reads the natural language, understands the sentiment of the email, queries the database to find the customer's purchase history, recognizes that there was a shipping error, interfaces with the logistics software to initiate a replacement, drafts a personalized apology email, and then simply flags a human manager for a one-click approval.
Oh, wow. So the human is no longer doing the raw task of looking up the tracking number. The human is just managing the AI assistant.
Exactly. The AI is doing the heavy lifting. The human provides the judgment. Businesses will use AI to handle this kind of hyper-personalized execution at scale, while the human focuses entirely on strategy, empathy, and handling those out-of-distribution exceptions that the AI just can't process.
Personalization at scale.
Yeah.
I really think that is the key phrase for the future.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see education systems that instantly adapt the curriculum to the exact learning style and pace of a single student.
Absolutely.
We'll see preventative healthcare plans tailored perfectly to an individual's genetic markers. The real future isn't about robots taking over. It's about humans and AI working together. AI will assist rather than fully replace humans in most jobs.
But, and this is a big but, to achieve that, the trust in these systems has to be ironclad, which brings us right back to those risks we discussed. As adoption increases across all sectors, understanding AI's limits like data bias and privacy risks is just as important as leveraging its speed.
So what does this all mean? When we map out this entire trajectory to 2026, I think it becomes pretty clear that artificial intelligence is not some sci-fi villain coming to steal human consciousness.
No, definitely not.
It is an extraordinarily efficient tool. It's designed to handle the heavy lifting of data, repetitive tasks, and really complex problem solving at a scale humans simply cannot match.
And your role in this new ecosystem is going to shift. You'll move from being a creator of raw output to a curator of intelligent systems. You have to learn how to guide the machine.
Which leaves us with a truly fascinating paradox to consider as we wrap up. Just something for you to mull over. If generative AI and smarter automation successfully take over your most repetitive tasks and your entire workflows by 2026, what will you do with the massive amount of time and mental energy you get back?
That is the real question, isn't it?
It is. Will you use that time to become more creative, more strategic, and essentially more human? Or will you just become more dependent on the machine to do your thinking for you? Think about it.